And good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday, June 2nd, 51 degrees here in Old Town Park City. A few clouds on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center. Erica Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. So I'm really happy today because we're seeing much calmer wind speeds and also a lot more moisture in the atmosphere. Not promising any rain for today. However, we're definitely seeing an improvement there. And quick note on much of Summit County, in fact, is in the moderate drought concern for our drought monitor. A small portion of it, really the eastern quarter, is in the dry area. So that's definitely worth mentioning because my focus here is going to be on precip. So today we're going to see an increase in clouds. Now, temperatures are going to be in the upper 70s. We're still going to see a nice day overall. It's just telling me that we have a little bit more moisture that's kind of moving into our forecast region, and I'm really, really happy about that. We're seeing a few troughs dig on in, and that could trigger a few isolated showers. I don't feel like it's going to produce any for Summit County, for Park City in general. But what I do see is those chances of showers that I mentioned yesterday, certainly for Friday, Saturday, but I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I actually see a couple of showers for late Thursday. Now, the expected high temperature for today, again, is going to be in the upper 70s. Tomorrow, we're going to see low 80s. That's going to be the same deal on Thursday, but I am increasing that chance of some showers. Certainly seeing the increase in that atmospheric profile for moisture on Thursday, so that's good news there. I'm still going to leave you probably like partly mostly cloudy, but temperatures in low 80s. Staying in the 80s on Friday, a high of 81 degrees with those showers and one or two isolated thunderstorms. This isn't going to be, I'm hoping we'll see more showers like moderate downpours, but again, it's going to depend on how much moisture we tap into. Right now, models are showing favorable amounts. However, I'm just going to leave us at showers for Park City right now. Now, on Saturday, we're going to keep it in the 60s. So we're going to cool down quite a bit. We're going to go into the upper 60s, and then the same deal on Sunday. So we go from like 67 to about 62 degrees, and then upper 50s to low 60s by Monday. But we're going to keep the potential for some showers simply because cold air doesn't really hold on to any kind of moisture too long. So any available moisture that would come in, the good news is at least it has a better chance of producing rain showers. So that's kind of the deal for the weekend. A little bit cooler, more clouds, but the chance for some showers, which we all need and certainly you need because you're right now in the dry to moderate category for the drought monitor.
Okay. Erica, thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, taking a look at the agenda for Wednesday's county council meeting. Park City School District Director of Community Education Todd Cleric will tell us about the free summer school program, and the Director of Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox, with an update on some of the open space issues. Stay tuned. And stay tuned. Coming up on This Green Earth, right after the local news hour, today's guests include Joseph Wilson, an assistant professor of biology at Utah State University, talking about native bees. Studies show that there are more than 1,000 species of bees just within the state of Utah. Then a conversation with Dr. Paul Anastas, a professor in the practice of chemistry for the environment at Yale University, talking about the concept of green chemistry. All of that coming up on today's edition of This Green Earth. Well, more than 300 people attended the student-sponsored Youth Against Police Brutality protest on Dozier Field yesterday. It was a mix of youth, adults, and community leaders. KPCW's Carolyn Murray was there to listen to speeches and spoke with some of the student organizers.
The protest was put together in less than 2 days. Strict distancing and mask-wearing practices were in place in addition to sign-in sheets requesting address and phone numbers in the event contact tracing would be needed. Dozier Field is marked with yard lines, and it offered a particularly effective way for small groups to keep precise distancing from one another. One of the organizers, Lance Rothschild, introduced the half-dozen speakers and initiated the protest with a specific tribute to George Floyd, the man who was killed in a police interaction in Minneapolis last week.
Solidarity with George Floyd and all victims of police brutality, we will now kneel for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, the amount of time George Floyd's neck was kneeled on until he died.
Rothschild read a list of names of some of the men, women, and children of color whose lives were taken by the police in recent years. He urged the mostly white crowd that complacency is the same as condoning racism. He told the crowd they have an obligation to society.
Watching while black men and women, boys and girls are lynched before our eyes, we stand on the edge of the pit, offering nothing but our thoughts and our prayers and our hope that someday the world will change. We must use our privilege to force real change.
Upcoming 11th grader Carly McAleer had a message for all those attending, both white and non-white.
Not being racist is not enough. We must actively call out racism. Racists should feel afraid and uncomfortable around you because they know that you will call it out. You have the courage to call it out, especially when it's your friend, and even more when it's your own family. Because you and I, we must protect black lives constantly and consistently. Because white silence is violence.
Emma Tang has younger brothers who are in the Park City School District and has become an activist in Colorado working on political campaigns. She was invited to speak and told the crowd the criticism of looting and violence during a protest is unfounded. She says looting and violence has been used as historical precedent.
It's always really important to acknowledge who came before us, and especially that every treaty that the U.S. has ever made to the Native people has been broken. So we really are sitting on stolen land and kind of on the looting. But I think for the black folks who are leading the protest, looting is in their right because nobody ever really got anything done peacefully.
Her speech criticized the police force as an institution, saying officers need more sensitivity training, background checks in domestic violence, and gun usage education. Upcoming junior Noam Levinsky has been interested in social justice and activism and is on the Park City High School debate team. He believes issues like white privilege and racism are issues society must deal with to stop the police brutality against black Americans.
But then when I saw on the news a few days ago that riots were erupting all across the country, I knew this was a new kind of activism. There was more activism happening in the country, and people were starting to like really be tired of being oppressed. And I decided that because of that, because there's so much movement, now is the time to do something about it.
Levinsky says they organized a march down Main Street, but with the weekend violence at other protest events, they worked with school administrators and the Park City Police Department and shifted venues at the last minute. Utah State Senator Sandra Hollins is the first African-American woman to serve in Utah's legislature. She asked the crowd to put aside politics and work to bring about equal treatment from law enforcement and to stand in opposition when racism is observed. The event can be found in its entirety on KPCW's Facebook page. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
8:14, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council meets virtually starting at 2:45 Wednesday afternoon. On the phone with a preview of the meeting, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
You'll be the council will be discussing the recommendations for grant funding for both the Rap Tax Cultural Project and the restaurant grants. And I should note that KPCW is an applicant for both of these grants. Has the funding for these two Rap and restaurant grants been affected by COVID, or is that what we're going to see next year?
Yeah, you're going to see it next year because the funding that was collected for these rounds of grants was collected in 2019. So the 2021 budget year will be the most affected by what's going on right now.
All right. So concerning the RAP funding, there are recommendations for 17 entities amounting to just over $1 million. It looks like there are actually a few more grants where the committee is recommending more than what the applicant is asking.
Yeah, and I guess we'll hear the justification for that tomorrow. My guess is that they felt there was great value in the projects, and through the discussions that they had with each of the applicants, they were probably asking the question, if you got more money, would you be able to use that for the project that you have applied for in order to enhance those projects? But we'll hear more about that from the leaders of the committee.
Okay. And let's see, there's a lot more money than for the restaurant tax just based on the 1% that's collected on all restaurant meals?
Yeah, about $4.9 million was collected in, that's what people applied for. a much larger amount is available in the restaurant tax grant traditionally. Just because the rep taxes is split 50-50 between recreation and culture. The culture round is in the beginning of the year, and the recreation round of grant applications usually happens in the third quarter of the year.
Okay, so for the restaurant tax, we're looking like a recommendation for 47 recipients for that $4.9 million. And it looks like there's going to be some special provisions this time, basically, if events that these grants fund can't be held because of COVID restrictions, then the recipient will have to return the funding. I was thinking that we were going to let them hold on to it.
Well, it's going to be a balance between the two, because there's a possibility that depending on how long they have to expend the money, and there's different rules for RAP and for restaurant tax. So that, you know, if they have an 18-month period to spend the money based on the grant source, then they have a little bit more flexibility because they might be able to hold that event within that time period. If they only have a year, usually the event has to happen on its regular schedule in order for that to work. So we'll be staying close in contact with all of these recipients this year. To see how things are going, because, you know, everything around COVID has been so fluid as far as whether events can be held or not. We don't know whether there's going to be any resurgence, which, raises our risk level in the future. This is going to be a year these grant rounds are going to be interesting in how we track those and whether events happen.
All right. A seasonal wildfire update from Fire Warden Bryce Boyer comes with some COVID protocols for dealing with wildfires. What do those entail?
Well, I mean, just like everything else, when you bring in fire crews into a fire fighting situation, just like happened in Wasatch County within the last few weeks, they have to be protected as well from the spread of COVID. So, they put in place protocols to separate crews so that they were not sleeping in the same areas, that they were using different hygiene facilities, that they were eating at different times, all of those types of protocols in order to keep those crews safe and keep them on the fire in this case. So those are some of the things that they're talking about statewide now. As we get into fire season, because I'm sure as we're going to talk about in a second, we're looking at a fire season that has a lot of potential to be bad this year.
Yeah, the outlook. Is it correct that after a pretty dry and warm May, we should expect some wetter weather around this first half of June?
Well, I mean, as we're hearing from the weather folks, even in some of your reports, that we're going to get some rain here in the first week of June. That's very helpful, but a very dry May has not helped out all that much. So that means that the later June and into July, we're probably going to have some weeks that are very dry, and moisture levels are already low. So. This is going to be a year that we're going to have to be extra vigilant.
Let's see. Any predictions of whether fireworks will be allowed in July?
Not going to predict that. I think each city has to deal with that on their own from a city ordinance perspective. And then, of course, the governor's office or the state fire warden can enact those restrictions by themselves. The counties don't have the ability to do that. So we usually rely on the state to make those determinations.
Okay, let's see. The discussion of the Rocky Mountain Power Renewable Energy Project, it looks like the project provider is an entity called D.E. Shaw Renewable Investments. Is this a solar project in Tooele County that we're talking about?
Well, The project is the same. The company that originally bid on this recently sold to D.E. Shaw, a new investment company that is taking over the project. So that's one of the updates that's involved here. But what we're really at is a decision point based on that sale. The new company doesn't have the ability to finance that over a 15-year period that was originally projected in the RFP and the company that was selected. They have the ability to do it at a 20 or 25 year period at a slightly higher cost to all of the entities. And so that's the decision point that all of the entities are having to make by this week in order to continue the project or opt out at this point.
Right. So what is the cost? We've never heard that.
Well, I mean, we're dealing with it from a standpoint of what it normally costs us to provide electricity for our government operations, and then an increment above that in order to over that 20-year period or 25-year period. And it looks like to all of the county entities, and that includes Mountain Regional Water, which is the largest user of energy in the county, the Park City Fire District, the Snyderville Basin Recreation District, and then, of course, the county. An annual increase over what that base cost is of either $28,000 at the 25-year amortization or $31,000 at the 20-year amortization. So it compares to what we were looking at earlier. It's a difference of either about $15,000 a year over all those entities or a little less than that at the 20-year mark. But that's at a total annual cost of electricity of just under $1.2 million for those entities.
And if we have more entities, the price will go down then.
Well, no, the number of entities is set for this purchase, and that's those are just the county partners. You'll recall that Salt Lake County, Park City, and some private entities are all also part of this project. So all of those entities have given an early indication that they're still in, and we have to give our opinion.
Do you have a recommendation then to the council?
Staff is recommending that we go forward, and we prefer the 20-year amortization. We don't feel that we still feel that it is a great value, even based on that slight increase in cost over that period of time. It's still a great value and still achieves the goals of the council to reduce the carbon footprint of the county.
All right. Let's see, a resolution amending the declaration of local emergency, known staff report here. What's this about?
Yeah, the staff report will be amended in today as well as the draft resolution. You know, our emergency declaration currently has a prohibition on permitting special events. That has a contradiction built into it based on our current risk level, which allows special events to certain size and certain protocols. And we are expecting those protocols or phase guidelines to change to allow even more special events at the state level. So we need to discuss that contradiction with our emergency order and see what the council wants to do.
All right. And then finally, a public hearing amending the East County Code on livestock fencing. Apparently, this is intended to make county code more compatible with state law. It would also change the county's livestock fencing regulations from a fence out approach to a fence in philosophy. I don't know what that means. Obviously done in
well,
ranching.
Well, I mean, it basically talked about who's responsible for keeping livestock on certain properties. So if you're a fence in state, then you're the animal owner is responsible for making sure that those animals don't go on other property. If you're fence out, then all property owners are responsible for keeping animals off of their property if they want to. So state law says that the default in state law is fence in, and our staff is recommending that we go back to the default of state law and make ourselves a fence in part for the Eastern County Code.
Okay, what kind of impact would that have then on the East Side ranchers?
Well, it places the burden of on the rancher to make sure their animals stay on their property. Now, there is a nuance on that if there is a traditional place where cattle are traversed across property, that it still remains the property owner's responsibility to fence out in that case. But in most cases, for grazing, it will make the burden on the property owner or the animal owner to make sure that those animals do not trespass on other people's property.
All right, Tom, anything else you want to mention?
No, that's we've got a lot going on, and we continue to advance the county's priorities. So keep listening, and I appreciate being on.
Thank you, Tom, for your time. That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We've got Todd Claris talking about summer school coming up. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now. 8:29, good morning. Well, Park City School District's summer school will be changing a bit just due to the closure of school. On the phone with details, I have the District Director of Community Education, Todd Claris. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So first, the news is that the school district will be offering summer school. And this year, unlike other years, I guess, it's free?
Yeah, so we're offering it free to all students. Thanks for having me on. We're excited this year to offer an all-virtual summer school, so buildings will not be in use. It will be offered for kindergarten through eighth grade. All students are welcome. The school district has waived the fees, and it's so completely free, as I said. We're still doing academics in the morning. The schedule looks 9 to 12 for academics. Students will be pre-assessed, and then based on their assessments, we'll have an academic individual pathway designed for them, which is very unique. Students will start the academic program at 9 a.m. They'll go into a virtual classroom with a teacher and their classmates. They will have about 30 minutes of class time. In this meeting, the teacher will go over objective for the day and talk about any relevant information, teach a small mini lesson, and then the students will be released to work on their academic pathway. So, really good stuff.
Okay, so really it goes from 9 to 9:30.
The virtual academic portion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the interaction, we're pre-testing all students this week and next week, depending on their individual pathway. We're going to do mini lessons and small groups from 9 to 9:30, and then they'll work with their specific teachers from 9 until 12, all academics, literacy, math, reading, writing.
Oh, okay. So that's all done on the computer screen for 3 hours then?
Correct. Correct. Okay.
So how much does it usually cost to go to summer school?
So last year we charged between $100 and $125, and scholarships were available. But this year we were lucky enough, the district, due to the hardships that the families are currently going through, the district was able to waive the fees. We were able to use some at-risk funding, as well as the district stepped up big time to help us accommodate. So, yeah, it's been really good.
Now,
really good.
Are certain kids required to take summer school?
No, we're opening it to all. Everything from remediation to catch up on that summer loss, if there's any of that, and just try to prepare the kids for what the fall holds for them. So we're also offering enrichment activities each afternoon, 12:30 to 2:30. We'll be offering these classes in the afternoon. We have activities scheduled such as fitness, cooking, art, STEM, escape room, percussion, recycling, coding, and dance will all be offered. So,
is that a separate program, or do you have to sign up for summer school to get into the enrichment program?
We would like all students to stay with us from 9:30 to 2:30. This year, we're also offering language classes for native Spanish speakers and students who are part of the DLI French and Spanish programs. first through eighth grade. These language classes will be taught by Park City School District teachers, and the students will be working on vocabulary building, conversation, and writing. We'll be doing reading and comprehension skills, as well as some learning fun songs and games as well. So,
all right. So this starts and ends when?
So it starts June 15th, and we run for 6 weeks until July 23rd. So.
Okay, and it's just Monday through Thursdays?
Correct, Monday through Thursday.
All right, and then again, the pre-testing is going to be taking place next week, so people need to register now?
Yeah, so we're hoping to have similar numbers to what we had in the past, which was around 175 to 200 students. However, we had an overwhelming response and are pleased to say that we've had registration over 565 students currently. Due to the high demand and numbers, we have had to cap it. So we are currently taking applications and reviewing them on a case-by-case basis. So hopefully we'll be able to accommodate all students.
Oh, wow. So I guess I'm curious about the kids that may have had a hard time adjusting to the virtual schooling during the regular school year. How is this going to make any difference, do you think, for those kids that had a harder time?
Yeah, we've worked with our my coordinators and my team and my staff and my teachers to really try to set up this individual pathway. It's going to be we saw that there was a small gap in what they were currently doing, and we're going to try to get a coordinator calling. We're working with our outreach team to do probably some home visits. If we can't reach these kids, we're going to do everything in our power to try to find out what the reason is. Is it a lack of, you know, not understanding the Zoom or Google Meets, or is it not a lack of not having a Wi-Fi hotspot? So we're actually going to be working with the families and our outreach team to try to not have any conflict for any students.
All right. And again, registration is done online, and people can find that link on the district's website?
Yeah, just our main webpage, www.pcschools.us, and there's a summer school link, and you can go and sign up there.
So with nearly five times as many kids registering, do you have enough teachers who are willing to teach summer school? I'm just wondering that, thinking that maybe some teachers are just exhausted from what they've been put through this.
Yeah, we were surprised, just like with the large number of students. Our teachers of the district have really stepped up, and they really want to get involved. It gives us them an opportunity to teach in a unique process as far as the individual pathways and as far as the small group learning. So we've had a lot of teachers step up. So we're going to have about 18 to 20 teachers on staff, as well as, like I said, our outreach team working, as well as our coordinators trying to reach every family and doing what we can for them.
Okay, and I think this was handed down by the State Board of Education that basically no students received failing grades this last quarter?
Yes, as far as that, that came from the State Superintendent, Dixon, as well.
Yeah, so when you talk about remediation, I mean, are you looking, it's not that, I mean, do they have an opportunity to change their grades, or is it doesn't really matter at this point?
Not specifically through summer school. Our goal is just, you know, to reach out to try to see where the kids are and to prepare them for the fall.
Okay. And again, it's just for grades, what, K through eight?
Kindergarten through eighth grade. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, anything else you want to tell us?
No, I think we're excited. And like I said, we've had the overwhelming response. So we're going to kick it into high gear and run the best program we can.
Okay. Todd Klarich, again, is the Director of Community Education for the Park City School District. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And again, you can see pcschools.us for the summer school updates. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, Heber City Police shared with the public two events that occurred over the weekend. On Saturday, Heber City Police received reports about possible threats to the police building, text messages discussing vandalism and setting fire to the police department building located on Main Street as a form of protest were forwarded to the police by concerned citizens. Heber Police Department says while they welcome protesting, they do not welcome vandalism, breaking the law, and setting fire. Police presence was increased Saturday evening, but there was no follow-through on the threats, and there were no protests, peaceful or otherwise, in Heber over the weekend. The department added that their most important concern is that the city maintains its peace and that citizens are safe. Then Monday at about 4:20 in the morning, police were dispatched to Walmart, that after an employee reported a suspicious package. The area was secured and police reviewed video footage of a man in his 30s pacing back and forth before setting the bag down around 9 p.m. The man then walked through the parking lot towards Highway 189. Utah County Bomb Squad checked the bag using X-ray and trained dogs before they determined it was not a threat. Law enforcement cleared the area about 8 a.m. and Walmart reopened. Police report the bag contained personal belongings. An injured mountain biker was rescued Sunday by Wasatch County emergency medical personnel and search and rescue crews. Dispatch received the 911 call just before 1 o'clock Sunday, and rescuers responded to an area above Wasatch Mountain State Park on the Wild Trail, where the 49-year-old woman had crashed on her bike. According to the Wasatch County Search and Rescue Facebook page, the biker was transported via muscle power to the state park to a waiting ambulance. Motorized 4x4s were used to haul responders up to the accident and then used to haul down her bike. No word on what injuries she suffered nor how she is recovering. Well, and perhaps another sign of reopening in the Park City area, the county's bike share program has returned for another season. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that the 2020 e-bike program comes with improvements and measures for sanitation.
The county's regional transportation manager, Caroline Rodriguez, said the e-bike program started as of Monday. It has 200 bikes available and will have 19 stations. She said the last station will be at the Jeremy Park and Ride when that reopens. She said that in response to the glitches and problems last year, the county hired a local project manager who has worked with the vendors over the winter to make improvements.
Well, in prior years, as it seems that the bikes weren't being maintained to our standards as we thought they were, there was a lot of disorganization, parts weren't arriving. Prior to the pandemic, of course, all of our parts came in this season. Everything is organized in the warehouse. We're confident all the bikes are ready to roll today, the day we open. She's put in a lot of administrative checks and balances.
The operators are sanitizing the bikes on a regular basis, but they're asking the public to take precautions also.
We're asking people to be responsible and make sure you're sanitizing your own hands before and after. In some of the station locations, obviously, like the transit center, there's a sink available to wash your hands with soap. In addition, the teams are out sanitizing every bike every day, as well as the kiosks and any touch point on the kiosk.
She said they won't be cleaning the bikes between every single use.
But the team is out at the stations pretty much all day, every day. So every time they come in contact with a bike, it will be sanitized. So most bikes will be sanitized multiple times a day. But there's one big sanitation daily, and then the on-the-ground maintenance will include a sanitation as well.
Rodriguez said they considered placing hand sanitizer at every station, but ultimately realized they won't last long there. You can register for the program at summitbikeshare.com. An annual pass for local residents and employees will cost $90. They're also offering a free one-month pass to local workers who were on the ground during the coronavirus outbreak.
We're talking, of course, healthcare workers, but also the grocery workers, the daycare providers that remained open during the pandemic. Anyone who was serving our community during that time, we'd love to offer you a free one-month pass. And to take us up on that offer, you just need to email me directly at crodriguez@summitcounty.org.
She had further details on the per-ride rate and other protocols for using the bikes.
There's a single ride pass, and that's $3 for 30 minutes. Every minute over 30 minutes is 15 cents a minute. When you have an annual pass, your rides are 45 minutes long before you need to dock. For example, if you were a local and you have that local pass and you want to keep the bike for more than 45 minutes, all you need to do is check it in at a station, dock it for a minute, and then pull it back out. And that's just to prevent people from keeping the bike to themselves all day.
Summit County Transportation Manager Caroline Rodriguez, who added that you can find the Summit Bike Share app on the App Store. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
8:43 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone, I have the Executive Director of Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox. Good morning. Hi there, Cheryl.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. So let's
good.
Let's start with the fact that Hops Hikes are back.
Hops Hikes are back. We are excited about this. You know, like most businesses and other organizations, we're figuring out how to continue in a different environment. And so we've made some changes to our hops hunting program. Basically, what we're going to do now, a couple of things. One, we decided to change the day and the time of the event. So we thought, you know, I mean, the whole goal of the hops is to find the hops, harvest the hops, and then have a hoppy hour and drink the product of the hops. So we thought maybe a hoppy hour time of hiking would be a little more fun. So the hikes will now be from 6 p.m., starting at 6 p.m., pretty much every other Wednesday through the course of the summer. The first one will be next Wednesday, that's June 10th. So they will be Wednesday evening at 6 p.m., and they go for about an hour or an hour and a half. We hike at different locations all through the summer. So, and we are now asking people to go ahead and sign up on our website so that we can make sure that we have a group that's a manageable and safe size during this environment. Also so we know, you know, who's planning to come, and then we can also give you guys directions or give people directions to where they should go for the hike. So our website is wesaveland.org. And click on the happenings tab and you can scroll down and you'll find the hops hiking calendar and how to sign up.
Okay, and you are asking people to bring a face covering.
We are to ensure, you know, I mean, the thing about the face coverings, I think it's just a way of being respectful to other people on the hike. And, you know, we know if we get out there and it's really strenuous and things like that, people might have to stop and rest for a little while. But, you know, the hop hikes aren't terribly rigorous. So, but we do want to keep people safe. We want to keep our staff safe. We want to keep other guests safe. So we are hoping that people will go ahead and bring a mask.
All right. With summer camps, did you fill those up and are they going to go on as planned?
We did fill them up. They are currently sold out, but we do have wait lists. So if people would like to join the wait list, they can do so. We have 8 camps over the course of the summer. And again, what we decided to do is a couple of things. And actually, we're kind of excited about it because we really remade the whole camp experience. We decided that putting, you know, 12 kids in a 15-passenger van and driving them for a half an hour or so to an activity didn't seem like a really safe thing to do for, again, for the kids in the camp and our staff. So what we're doing is we'll be having the camps all outdoors. So parents will drop the kids off at a certain location, pick them up at another location, and for the intervening 5 hours, we will be outdoors. We'll be hiking, we'll be biking, we'll be splashing in the creeks. We're really excited about this opportunity to kind of take camps in a little bit of a different direction. All of the information about what the camp activities are, again, on our website, wesaveland.org, under the happenings tab. But like I said, they are sold out at the moment. Because we went with a slightly shorter camp, we also went with a smaller group size. So instead of 12 campers per session, we now only have 10 campers per session. So, again, just trying to keep everybody safe and healthy and outdoors and enjoying our open spaces.
Okay. Let's see. We've heard from so many nonprofits in the last few months about how difficult things have been and really just fear for how things will be as we see the worst unemployment numbers since the Great Depression. What's the future for the Summit Land Conservancy given these tough financial times?
I'm really glad that you asked that question, Leslie. I've been on a lot of calls recently with other executive directors, both here in Park City and on a national level. And everybody is concerned about our organizations and our ability to continue to serve our missions for us, you know, the Summit Land Conservancy. Obviously, that's open space. And you know, we know that our mission to save land will be it remains important. We know that the work that we do that helps to combat climate change remains as critical as ever. And yet, of course, we're all facing, I mean, I heard Tom Fisher earlier talking about RAP tax grants and things like that. We're all facing a very uncertain future. On the other hand, I think that it's really important at this point for an organization like the Summit Land Conservancy to really listen to our communities. We are a community-based organization. We have been blessed with such amazing generosity from this community around the cause of open space. And sometimes that's donations to our organization. Sometimes it's voting for bonds. But there's just been so much support for that over these many years. And as I was listening to a lot of other people talk, I heard, you know, people say, well, we have to protect our reserves and our organization has to be stronger. I heard the executive director of a big national organization the other day say, you know, this organization must survive. And I thought, you know, in the context of our neighbors in Park City, people in our town who are absolutely in crisis, you know, what is the point of the organization? As a nonprofit, we exist to serve. We should not be valued by the size of our balance sheets. We need to be valued by the good that we can do. So after some soul searching and some digging around and doing a lot of just trying to, I don't know, you know, I listen to KPCW, I read the paper, listen to what's going on in the community. It seemed like the Summit Land Conservancy could find some ways to continue to save land. And I'll tell you, we have so much work right now. It's super exciting. It's challenging to keep doing it all via Zoom. But we also felt like we needed to save land and support our neighbors in crisis. So, you know, and this isn't just putting a nature walk on, you know, on the internet. That's good and that's interesting. But that's not really, I don't think, serving the people in crisis. So we've decided to do a couple of things. We're offering to write grants for agricultural producers in the Summit County area. And the thing that I'm most probably excited about is that we've gone ahead and we've hired 6 high school and college-aged kids in partnership with the Bright Futures Program with the Park City Education Foundation. And I mean, these are Summit Land Conservancy staff. They are employees right now because they'd all lost jobs in the hospitality industry. And so we're calling them our Bright Futures Conservation Corps, and they're doing all kinds of fabulous things. They're helping the city with weed control. They're working with the community garden. They're helping us develop plant guides that we can hand out to people. They're participating in the city's conversations. It's just been a terrific experience for us and a way for us to, again, save land and help people in need.
So you've got the funds then in the bank that you're able to do this. Instead of writing grants for yourself, you're writing it for others.
We got the payroll protection program loan, and our breakfast was successful that we had in April. And, you know, we normally have a big gala in August. That big gala is not going to happen as planned, and we're trying to figure out what's going to happen there. You know, we do not have infinite sources of income, and we are going to have to continue to figure that out. But I think that, again, you know, to protect the reserves that we have at the expense of people is not what a nonprofit organization is about, in my point of view.
Okay. Anything else, Cheryl, you wanted to mention?
I want to say happy 40th birthday to KPCW. You guys are looking good and providing such a fabulous service. And cheers. Happy birthday.
Well, thanks, Cheryl. It's Cheryl Fox, Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:53. Well, the 4 Republican candidates vying to represent the party in Utah's gubernatorial elections participated in a debate Monday evening that was sponsored by the Utah Debate Commission. KPCW's David Boyle reports on the candidates' responses to the police brutality protests occurring across our nation.
The moderator asked the candidates what they would say to President Trump had they been on Monday morning's governor's call, where the president called the 50 governors weak with their reactions to protests throughout the nation. Former Governor John Huntsman responded, saying he would shoot straight with the president.
I would ask, first and foremost, are we doing enough to thank law enforcement for putting their lives on the line? Are we doing enough to thank them and their families for the restraint that was shown in the face of anarchy? And then I would tell the president something else, because I served him in Moscow. I'd say on Saturday, I saw something I've never seen in this state. I saw Black Hawk helicopters circling in the sky downtown. I saw Humvees at the intersections. I heard curfews that were being enforced by the state. I would say, Mr. President, I'm concerned about civil liberties. This is not what we see in the state of Utah. Maybe others, but not here. This is what you see in other countries. We have the ability to manage our own situation. Thank you very much.
Lieutenant Governor Cox responded by first saying that the death of George Floyd was a murder.
There is no place for police brutality in America. We know that, and we have to stand up strong. At the same time, these lawful protests that are taking place have been hijacked by agents of chaos, by people who don't care about the movement at all, who aren't trying to make the world a better place. They only care about destroying lawfulness. They care about destroying property. They care about defacing property. And we must, and we did, respond with strength to those people so that we can allow the people space who are protesting lawfully, so that we can work together, and we will work together. We're working with our Multicultural Commission. We're working with our Martin Luther King Commission. We have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow to talk about these very issues. But there is absolutely no place for chaos. There is no place for destruction. We must have law and order.
Former Speaker of the House Greg Hughes responded, saying it was important to distinguish protests versus riots.
I join in the protest of what's happened to Mr. Floyd. The issue is not the protest, the outrage, the murder that we did truly see before our eyes on that camera. And there have been peaceful protests that have happened. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's incumbent upon us to really push back when we see this. And it was something amazing happening in this country where we were. It didn't matter what party you were or what philosophy and politics you subscribed to. There was a recoil that happened in this country that has been robbed from those that care. The rioters, those that look to prey upon the weak, those that try to create fear, civil unrest, break the law, that isn't what this is about. That's not the feelings that we all as a nation felt. And that is what has to be dealt with head on. I'm with this president. If you're going to go and go find quarantine issues to bring down the law, but you're not going to let these issues be handled, and you're going to let these rioters go, that's a deal killer.
Former GOP chair Thomas Wright said he was very uncomfortable and devastated by what happened to George Floyd.
As governor, I want to get involved in the peace officer standards and training, and that's called POST. It's the POST Council. As governor, I will direct the commissioner of public safety in his role on the POST Council to ensure curriculum for all new and future officers, so they'll be trained, so that they're listening and learning, and we're being compassionate with each other, and we can take action on racial inequality. And we could even discuss a course for current police officers. I know they want to be a part of the solution, and they should have an equal opportunity. Together, Utah can come together and lead the nation on this front.
The entire debate can be found through a link on KPCW's website. Utah primary election is June 30th. The Democratic Party will not have a primary debate, as Christopher Peterson won the nomination at the state convention. I'm David Boyle, KPCW News.
Summit County is asking residents to respond to a Kimball Junction area plan survey. They have extended the window for another week to get input about the transportation future at the junction. Summit County Transportation Manager Caroline Rodriguez said that the survey can be found on the county's website, and it will provide information for UDOT. She says they're asking citizens about their preferences.
How you would like to travel through the Kimball Junction area? Do you feel safe? It's trying to identify some really specific improvements to the interchange in the context of how UDOT looks at those capacity improvements, which is a little bit different from something, for example, like the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan.
She said that the area plan deals with Highway 224 and the basic idea that bus rapid transit lanes will be established along the corridor. She says they have a timeline for the environmental study of what's known as BRT, or bus rapid transit lanes.
And we expect to be releasing that RFP in the month of June. And that should take about between 9 to 12 months. And as part of the Kimball Junction area plan, we're using a process that will allow us to move from environmental to design more quickly based on the public input and other information that we're getting through the plan. So once we complete environmental, and let's just call it a year, Then we have another year for design, and we hope to be in construction by 2023.
That's Summit County Transportation Manager Caroline Rodriguez. She added that the Utah Transportation Commission recently approved a grant to the county for BRT. KPCW News Time now, 8:59. 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for mostly sunny skies today with a high near 78. Few clouds tonight, 54 is the overnight low. Sunshine and 80 on Wednesday. Looks like we've got a good chance of some showers on Thursday, according to the ABC Forecast Center. Again, another warm one with a high of 80. Stay tuned now for headline news from National Public Radio, followed by This Green Earth. You've been listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 9 o'clock.